Welcome to the Wicked Podcast, where we read the business books you don't have the time for. I'm Marcus Kish.
And I'm Troy Norcross.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wicked Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Wicked Podcast. Today I'm talking to Jamie Barnard, the CEO of Compliant. And we talked a lot about data and data ethics and all sorts of current players around AI and social media data and what we should consider to be a more ethical approach to data and what the pitfalls might be for organizations. And I hope you enjoy. Before the interview, a quick word from our very first sponsor, Zencastr. We use Zencastr for all our audio and video recording, and it's a very nifty tool that splits up all the channels for very easy editing. Zencastr is used by 10% of all active podcasts. You can get 40% off the first 3 months and unlimited audio and video recordings with our special coupon code WICKEDPODCAST. I repeat, WICKEDPODCAST for 40% off. And now the interview. Hello and welcome to the Wicked Podcast. Today I'm here with Jamie Barnard, CEO of Compliant. Hi, Jamie, and thank you for being here.
Hey, Marcus. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So as usual, we start at the top. So please tell us who you are and what you do.
As you said, my name is Jamie Barnard. I am the CEO of a privacy compliance technology company called Compliant. The clue's in the name.
So, and as I could see on your LinkedIn profile, and I think a little bit of what some of your colleagues sent us, so you previously left Unilever to start this new endeavor. So tell us a little bit what Compliant does and what brought you to make that step and put that into a company.
Yeah, well, perhaps I start where I left. So after 16 years as one of Unilever's media lawyers, looking after global marketing, global media, e-commerce, and all of our digital partnerships and agency relationships, I decided to leave a company I loved. I have to be honest there. I felt I could make a much bigger impact externally. My passion really has always been in the space of responsible media, whether that's brand safety or viewability or verification or whatever it might be. I've always worked in the kind of public policy space to try and narrow the gap between technology innovation and the law, I suppose. I'm a great believer in making technology work, but work for society as well as the kind of developers and the engineers and the companies behind them. And I think through Compliant, now I have a much better chance of doing that. When you look at the awesome capabilities that technology brings to our lives, and I think the future is going to get even more interesting and exciting, we have to make sure that innovation is responsible socially, morally, ethically. And that's not easy, as I'm sure we'll get into. So Compliant really is our way of helping advertisers and publishers achieve privacy compliance across their media supply chain.
So where do you see currently sort of the biggest issues with that? Sort of, I know we had a lot of, over the last few years, a lot of issues around, you know, Facebook and some other things popping up here and there. But what sort of in your own particular area that you're looking at, sort of what are some of the biggest themes in that sense of what's going on and where compliance is not hit or where companies are not acting in the right kind of way?
I mean, there are, of course, enormous challenges at all ends of the spectrum. You know, we don't, as Compliant, we don't service so much the big tech guys, largely because, you know, they take command of their own, everything that happens within the walled garden, so to speak. But, you know, I think for a lot of brands and a lot of publishers, They're trying really hard to achieve compliance in this space, but it's very complicated. And increasingly, there's a degree of a false sense of security, and perhaps I put it like that. So, you know, despite best efforts to put in place consent management platforms, for example, we're seeing enormous amounts of data passing in front of CMPs. If you look at the audit data that we completed last year, which is over 500 of the top global advertiser and publisher websites, I think more than 8 out of 10 advertiser sites in Europe had data flowing in front of the CMP. You know, there's an awful lot of unauthorized tags being piggybacked into web ecosystems without the website owner's permission. In some cases, there are an alarming number of data brokers and resellers, you know, accessing data on company websites, pulling that data out, bundling it up, and then reselling it. You know, you only have to think back to the likes of Cambridge Analytica and Jumpshot to see that the very serious consequences of that going wrong. And these kind of compliance failures are surprisingly common, despite the efforts that companies are going to. And I think if we really want to unlock the best of digital in an ad-funded model, then I think it's really important that companies start to look at this kind of compliance again.
So when we look at that, and I assume, maybe I know to some extent that, you know, the data that ad platforms are using is not the only data that companies are using or other companies are using, I guess, similar data. And when you listen to someone like Tim Berners-Lee, who basically said, you know, look, the benefit of the internet is that data can flow frictionless, obviously within reason, but that's where sort of a lot of the power of that comes from. My background is in managed design thinking, service design. We're using interviews, we're using other user data to actually understand and build journeys. So, and how much do you see that there is a bit of a, maybe there needs to be a new model or a new or a different kind of approach that, so that it's not just that data gets sold, but also that companies can build better services and better products. Do you think there's somewhere there a paradox or a line to breach? And, you know, how do you strike a balance in that area, therefore? Because without the data, you potentially don't have a business. With the data, you run into these compliance issues and, I guess, some bad actors on top of it, or just people who can't manage the data in a correct way.
Well, so Tim Berners-Lee has always been a huge advocate for open data. And I think this creates, you know, a degree of paradox. You know, obviously, certainly when it comes to personal data, it's highly regulated and almost globally regulated now, in the sense that there are regulations in almost every country in some form or another. If you fast forward to early stage Web 3, and then, you know, perhaps even in 10 years or 15 years time, you know, some early iteration of a genuine metaverse, that degree of open data sharing is of paramount importance. In fact, you will never achieve immersive Web 3 and metaverse without a degree of interoperability that is unimaginable today. So the vision for an open data ecosystem is there for a reason. You know, if we have the ability for people to move between digital worlds, take with them virtual merchandise, your avatar looks and feels the same as you travel from Roblox to Decentraland to Fortnite, whatever it might be. It really means that the different walled gardens that we see today have to become permeable. In other words, the big players have to play nicely in the playground and allow for a degree of data sharing that, as I say, is frankly unimaginable today. We have to solve these compliance problems. As a society, it's inevitable that we will share more and more and more data as technology allows us to reap the benefits, whether that's in, you know, biometric monitoring or remote diagnostics for health, or even more commercial applications like, you know, the ability to be in a virtual dressing room and try on, you know, the latest Nike Jordans or whatever. The ability to do all of this requires enormous amounts of data sharing. And it's probably going to get more complicated as the technology becomes more complicated. So companies have to solve this. It's not that, I don't want to say it's easy. It's not easy, but it's not beyond the wit of man. If we can put nanobots inside our bodies to kind of target cancer cells, we can certainly solve the compliance challenges in media and digital advertising, but it is difficult.
Yeah. And do you think that, speaking of that, and when you say the companies need to take care of that, do you think that's borderline where we might be on an edge of where we might not maybe let, we might need, let's say, the government or other areas to quite steer on that to help companies really do that better or have a better eye on them? Because if I look at that, if I look at some of the data that's out there, anything from, say, healthcare data, for example, and I remember because I was working over at the NHS during when the COVID passport was a discussion point, right? And there you have all these different levels of data and how much to expose it when you just go there and you know, show that just to get entrance to an event, those kind of things, right? This all raises issues where data that companies have collected are suddenly nearly playing in the area of where normally government sits in terms of passports, identity, access to space areas, countries, right? Do you think that's in the right hands with companies that we've been, you know, again and again seeing basically breaching that or hiding things or just really not acting in the best of interests, so that the future needs maybe a different approach of leaving that with the companies or someone else as an entity needs to maybe enforce that or set up those models instead of letting the companies do that themselves. Can they? Because I can imagine.
I mean yeah. National regulation of data processing is obviously of critical importance. History has shown that companies left to their own devices won't always act in the interest of society and individual rights to privacy. Nevertheless, you can't rely holistically on government anywhere. In most markets, there is an overwhelming lack of enforcement. They just don't have the resources to hold everyone to account for bad behavior. In fact, I think we're seeing a massive shift now in society, moving away from privacy being a little bit of a thorn in the side of enterprise, where laws have popped up, meaning lawyers inside companies have been trying to get best practice in place because otherwise they will fall foul of the law. Whereas I think now the big shift is the recognition that the future in almost every aspect of life will be built around the sharing of quite personal data, and in some cases extremely sensitive data and unimaginable amounts of personal data. Which means it's no longer the remit of lawyers inside companies. it's no longer a slightly irritating compliance, you know, must do. It is part of business. You know, the companies to beat in the future will be the companies that are built around privacy, not because there is a government mandate or there is some European regulation. They will do it because operationally there is really no choice. We're not there yet, but I definitely see that shift happening. And a lot of that shift is happening because of government regulations and also because of a lot of privacy activists putting a lot of pressure on data protection authorities to enforce those regulations against companies. And we've seen a big wave of litigation, regulatory investigations and so on against big tech, you know, the likes of Google, Amazon, Instagram, WhatsApp, Microsoft, you name them, all of them. Then they went after ad tech, you know, the kind of middlemen in the digital advertising ecosystem that are facilitating ad serving through programmatic media buying, which involves the sharing of data about millions, if not billions of people with hundreds of companies in a thousandth of a second. And now, increasingly, regulators in Europe in particular are looking at the advertisers, the brands, the publishers, and other ad tech intermediaries. So I think we're moving into a world now where, honestly, privacy compliance is part of the fabric of digital business.
Yeah. And I wonder what that also means in terms of, you know, as a brand as well. There's two things that come to mind. One is when I see sort of the current movement of the B Corp and to be more responsible around the companies, but also all through the supply chain and partnerships and so on. There seems to be a really interesting movement to expand that outside even of a single company, because you don't have to think systemically these days. And, you know, so people, companies are making the effort to not just themselves, but all their partners to be compliant and on a certain level. But the other idea, the other story that just popped up in my head when you talked about that was the story about Apple. And it was, I don't know if it was the FBI, the CIA, that tried to get access to some phones on the product, and where Apple said, no, we're not going to give you just easy access to it. We're not going to give you a toolkit that cracks it open for you in order to protect the users. Well, what was your thinking about those kind of things? Are there similar examples as well on that where companies are doing that? Or what did you think about that particular example, that story?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very bold and frankly quite a brave move from Apple. These companies are regularly subpoenaed for access to information that's held on their hardware and obviously the software within the hardware. As soon as you open the floodgates there, then privacy has gone completely. So what, you know, I fully understand Apple's position there. It gets tricky when you start moving into encryption. You know, for a while, Facebook was threatening to encrypt everything, just like they're doing it with WhatsApp. Of course, as soon as it's encrypted, nefarious behavior, nefarious activities, the sharing of illegal content cannot be accessed by authorities. But protecting privacy in this way is extremely important. And when you look at it in another way, you know, it kind of brings this home quite clearly. So when the Supreme Court in the US overturned Roe and Wade, allowing states to ban abortions effectively, the anti-abortion states have the lawful right to subpoena information from people. So yeah, their shopping history, the text messages they've sent, the emails they've sent, the location, you know, so they can track that someone went to an abortion clinic and so on. They can access all of that data and use it to prosecute women. More than that, they can subpoena the friends and family and prosecute anybody who's aided and abetted that young woman. I say young woman, of course, it can be any age, in her hour of need. And that invasion of privacy has alarming social consequences. So the right to privacy is so much more important than we sometimes think, especially when we talk about it in the context of, you know, advertising and digital media.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, it's a great example.
Just to add, because a lot of the data that they're capturing is from what people are doing online, in social media and so on.
Yeah.
All of that's used as evidence against people. So it's not as harmless as we sometimes think.
No, it definitely isn't. And I think, you know, especially with the Roe v. Wade, we have already seen some of the impact of that, where doctors couldn't even interfere helping their patients on the fear of prosecution. And, you know, that there's already incredible damage done there through this. And all of that feels, you know, because I work a lot in change and transformation in the digital area, you will probably see yourself, just like I do, that there's a massive literacy gap between a lot of companies not even understanding, you know, what data can do, how it really works, and what the context of data often is. And you just took Roe v. Wade as an example, where there's a piece of information that you might not necessarily think that's a big deal, but if you really look at it in terms of context and you connect it to a couple of dots, suddenly it becomes incredibly powerful or incredibly damaging. How much of your work, therefore, is sort of with companies? What's your view on companies and their maturity and even, you know, understanding enough to, let's say, call someone in like you to say, look, I know we're dealing with data somewhat, we don't really know what it all is and what it all means and what else can happen with it, you know. Can you help us? I mean, what's your view at the moment on how this looks like, or what sort of typical conversations you're having with companies around the context of data?
I mean, you mentioned, a shortfall in data literacy. There's also a massive resourcing gap. Until we are able to automate privacy compliance, and that's the business that we're in, you know, is trying to improve the ways companies can achieve high levels of compliance through automation. Because at the moment, trying to do it manually is an impossibly difficult and labor intensive task, especially for companies that operate in multiple markets with hundreds of brands. The kind of real-time data trading is too big a beast to track and manage manually. And yet the law doesn't make any allowances for complexity. So it doesn't matter that it's difficult. The law and the legal obligations are there nonetheless. And really helping companies to find ways to simplify their data protection compliance without compromising, you know, the great things that can be done through data partnerships, data collaboration, through, you know, analytics and data processing of all sorts. You know, I think this is the secret, is finding a future where, far from not using data, we're actively encouraging data use, but in ways that respect the rights and expectations of people and society. And it feels like the two are in conflict, but truthfully, they're not. I think we'll move towards a world where the new battleground is the creativity of consent. Mm-hmm. In other words, the companies that will win will be the ones who are better at persuading people to give them the permissions that the company needs in order to give the consumer what the consumer wants. So I think we'll see some very interesting and creative solutions around consent. Now, even in the US now, where, companies have to honor opt-out requests, there is an incentive to encourage people not to opt out. We're in a battle now for first party and second party data. Mm-hmm. As only last week, I think, the European Commission ruled against Meta, who for a long time had maintained that they would obtain consent through their terms and conditions. So effectively, if you want to use Facebook, you have to agree to allow them to use your data to personalize ads. Well, that's been thrown out now. That model is not lawful. Mm. So they will have to rethink how they get consent from people. In the same way that Apple forces now Apple users to make a choice. Do you want to give Facebook the right to track you online? If people say no, then the amount of data they have, the amount of first-party data they have, will drop dramatically, which will have a huge financial impact on the company. Yeah. So, again, they need to find ways to encourage people to say yes. Advertising and ad tracking and personalized advertising can be superb. It can really add to people's lives. It can also be horrendous and make people feel very unsettled, like they live in a surveillance culture. But I'm a great believer, a great optimist that there are ways forward for this.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's such a double-sided sword, the whole thing. And, it's interesting where it's going to go because it's sort of the proverbial Pandora's box that's been opened and you can't just close it anymore. As you said, we will just be using more data. And I keep trying to find analogies to other things that we had before, be it guns or be it something else, or just being selling someone a hammer and you don't know if they're going to build something with it or they have to kind of bash someone's head in with it, right? Because data in itself is essentially neutral, right? If you look at it like that.
It's a double-edged sword today, but it doesn't need to be. If you look at the compliance failures that have resulted in these enormous fines against, Instagram, WhatsApp, Amazon, Meta, even Microsoft recently, Sephora. When you drill down and look at what they did that resulted in the fine, a lot of the behaviors we would all accept or we would all agree are not acceptable. Mm. So if you take, if you look at e-dating, so when we ran audits of 500 global advertiser and publisher sites, we found that e-dating was relatively positive from a compliance point of view. Mm-hmm. And you might wonder, why is e-dating coming out as kind of a strong candidate for high levels of compliance? And then you look back at the two big cases, Ashley Madison and Grindr. Grindr is a website for, gay, trans, bisexual clientele. Yeah. And, that's pretty sensitive for most people. They were bundling up and selling data to advertisers. Mm. And a lot of that data was really, really sensitive. No one in their right mind would think that that was acceptable. Mm. And a lot of these cases are quite similar, So it's a double-edged sword, but it doesn't need to be. If we bring ethics and discipline and control into the way data is collected and used, and we do it in a way that is largely in the interest of individuals and society, we definitely can unlock the full potential of a fully immersive internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, we have always more questions than we have time, so I'm starting to head towards the last question. more practical one maybe. So apart from obviously calling you and talking to you as a CEO, what, or as a, you know, person in a company who's responsible for that area, the data and whatnot, where do you think needs this to sit best, right? So I just came back from a project last year over WPP, which is massive, over 2,000 companies, and they're trying to swap data to the benefit of their clients, right? So they won Coca-Cola last year, and there was a multi-agency effort. So they're trying to bring this data more and more together so that assets can be exchanged. And obviously, they're quite aware of this because of their clients themselves, not necessarily consumer, but their clients first and foremost, because their clients want to make sure all the assets, the data, and everything that gets moved around is safe and secure. No one else can see it, and competition can see it. But that's a very complex production and delivery cycle where there's a lot of different places and pieces and suppliers and whatnot to where data travels through and exchanges hands. Where do you see this oversight to sit best so that not only the data people are fully aware, trained, and know where these things need to sit, but again, from my perspective, as a service designer and designing experiences, I see that, you know, it's not just the data and the tech, there is the human factor to it. And you just gave the example of Grindr, where probably some data person was sitting there and going, and I'm not saying they're not smart enough to understand this, but they looked at the data, there's some opportunity to sell it. Oh, we could do it, it's data, right? It's data about people. But someone else with a more empathetic training and approach will say, hang on a second, this is really personal private data. If you unleash that data, let's say somewhere over in Saudi Arabia, it's highly, highly dangerous to do so. So you want to be careful with that type of data, not that type of data, and that type of data in that context and the other. So there's a lot of different aspects to it that likely sit outside of, let's say, a chief data officer's remit, because it touches so many other points. What's sort of your proposition to say, look, where these things should sit? Is it sort of a general training? Are there key points? What do you normally see, or what do you at times propose where these things should be aware?
I mean, it's a very good question. I mean, fundamentally, it sits with every individual. When you look at bad data practices across the extremes, you know, so the really, really horrific ones that you wonder how on earth your company was able to do that in the first place, to much more normal and nuanced things, you know, and a lot of them are unintended, you know, a lot of compliance failures were not, you know, deliberate, but most of them are, right? So fundamentally, people in companies are still making choices with data, which are clearly legally, and if not legally, ethically unsound, right? So it's very important that CEOs and senior management make it very clear that privacy or lack of, so privacy is really important, and there'll be zero tolerance to you know, privacy failures. It's very important that companies are culturally super clear now that, you know, we will respect people's right to privacy. That then trickles down into the way the organization is run and the culture of the company. You know, companies in R&D will be running clinical trials. Every function in an organization will be using AI. A lot of that AI will be working off personal data. Decisions will be made automatically by that, which then need to be interrogated by humans. It always comes back to the individual. We need cultural guidance and hardcore rules that say we will respect people, and we will design this into our products. We will design this into our services, because the future utterly depends on squaring that circle, you know, managing to run the best innovation in a way that is not in conflict with people's rights and expectations of privacy.
Yeah. I think that's a powerful message. I think the whole thing is interesting. How many things always end up somewhere with, you know, it just needs to be in the culture. You know, it's not about having a bunch of specialists sitting around. It needs to be embedded in the culture, however big a company might be, which is obviously, yeah, often run from the top, setting the direction of what this should be. And it's a big call, it's a big deal, and I think, I hope more CEOs take note to be better at communicating that internally. Because, you know, as we both know, it sometimes gets a bit overlooked how important the communication of what our principles are and what the culture actually should be is there. And I hope it's not going to tip over more. You know, when economic pressure is high, suddenly things get, you know, corners get sometimes cut. And I hope that that is not becoming part of it. Thank you very much for your time. My head is spinning at the moment of all the kind of things and, you know, circling that square. I think it's what you said or something else. I could talk to you probably for another hour easily on this, because it's like there's probably a lot of stuff to dive really, really deeply into. But it's a very exciting subject matter, and so all the best for Compliant. I think you're probably going to have your hands full for the next couple of years, I'm sure, on that, the way it sounds. So thank you so much for your time, Jamie, and for your answer.
I hope so. Really nice to meet you. Thanks very much for your time. Take it easy.
You've been listening to The Wicked Podcast with co-host Marcus Kirsch and me, Troy Norcross.
Please subscribe on Podomatic, iTunes, or Spotify. You can find all relevant links in the show notes. Please tell us your thoughts in the comment section and let us know about any books for future episodes.
You can also get in touch with us directly on Twitter on @WickedAndBeyond or @Troy_Norcross. Also, learn more about the Wicked Company book and the Wicked Company project at wickedcompany.com.